Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you. It is a Reaction Monday here on Sports Daily, and we got a lot of reaction to get to. Wild late night of Sunday night football takes us into our final game of the weekend, Monday night football, featuring the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the New Orleans Saints. We will have much, much more on that matchup throughout the program today. So stay tuned for that. You'll hear it, by the way, on your home of Kansas City Chiefs football, the Chiefs Radio Network, over on 98.7 tonight. And it collides right with a Royals Game 2 of the ALDS, which you'll hear here on the home of the Royals, KFH. That coverage begins at 6 o'clock for a 6:38 first pitch. We've got to get to reaction to a Game 1 on Saturday, though, and we will do plenty of that. Also joining the program today, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats, for his weekly visit as we get ready to, go down. And it used to be down the home stretch, right? But K-State gets another bye, but it is coming out of a bye. So we'll get to all the K-State news as they enter a juicy part of their schedule to maybe go out and keep winning some games. We'll get into that with Wyatt Thompson in our next segment. We'll give away a little HTO today. Your chance to win some free iced tea, some free coffee. That's coming a little bit later. The IHOP hotline is open. That's where we find Jad Chambers. It's brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. And we are welcoming your commentary. I'm Jacob Albracht, by the way. Tommy Kester will be in just a few minutes. You can call that IHOP hotline if you want to leave your comments. You can also leave those comments on Facebook. You can leave those comments on YouTube. You can leave those comments on X, and of course, you can find us on 12 News Connected Plus, the app on your smart devices, your smart TV. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on a big Monday. It's a playoff baseball Monday. We'll get to Monday Night Football. Let's react a little bit here to a Game 1 of the ALDS. I don't know how the masses out there feel. I've got a little bit of mixed feelings. The loss in that game doesn't bother me. Gerrit Cole can't beat them three times in this series, but they got to Gerrit Cole. And they didn't get the win. That was an incredible baseball game to watch. The Royals couldn't finish it off. They would get leads. They couldn't get it. There are two, critical calls sort of that Royals fans are irked about. You had the no out call on the runner stealing second that, it appeared to be out, but was it conclusive? It was tough, but that was a tough call. And then of course that strike three on Bobby Witt Jr. late in the game. Sticks with you for you're a Royals fan too in that 6-5 loss. Best, you'd feel a little less concerned if it was best of seven, but it's best of five, first of three wins. But Walker was on the mound for the Royals. Cole was on the mound for the Yankees. That was a very clearly advantage Yankees kind of lineup. And now if you're the Royals, you come through and you get to throw Reagans out against Rodon. This is a game you feel like you should win if you're the Royals. And what a big spot for Cole Reagans in his quest to be this Royals ace and, never a better opportunity than right now. I wouldn't say backs are against the wall, but it feels that way in a three-game series. You certainly don't want to go down two games to nothing. But here we go. Reagans has his chance here to do something special. He did not face the Yankees this year, so this is fresh. That late season series where we saw Lugo pitch so well. Reagans didn't pitch in that particular series. And so they haven't seen him. I think that's a good thing for the Royals, certainly. Rodon has been pretty good for the Yankees, too. And he doesn't have the reputation of Gerrit Cole, but he's a good pitcher. And he did go to Kansas City and pitch very well against the Royals back in June. He went seven innings, allowed only a run. And then he played them and pitched well against them at Yankee Stadium, gave up two runs over six. So he has two starts against the Royals this year. He's been pretty good in both. They'll need to be better against him. I think they can be. I think that if you're looking to the positives of that game one, yeah, you got to pull. The offense looked much better, I thought, in that game than they had in a while. They looked productive. They were aggressive. You had production. Massey at the top continues to be good. They put together five runs, and none of those RBI came in the top five hitters of the lineup. Right? Do you feel good about that? I actually do. Would you like to see the top of the lineup, you know, especially Whit, Pasquantino, Perez, be more productive? Of course you would. Yuli Gurriel was incredible in the game. Those three big bats, yeah, they got to start doing something, but I feel good that these other guys in the lineup, including Michael Massey at the top of the lineup, nice button push there from Quatraro. He's been really good there, and I do think those three will start hitting. This feels to me like a long series. If that first game was any indication, it was incredible back and forth. And so here we go. Game two tonight. I hate the day off. I text Tommy this last night. I hate the day off in baseball when it's not a travel day. But it makes this show more fun today because we got to stall, right? And you get this Royals-Chiefs collision tonight as the Chiefs will take on the Saints in Monday Night Football. So some quick reaction there to the Royals, and we will get much, much more into the Royals as we make our way through the program today, of course.
Hey, Jacob.
Game. Yes, Chad.
One thing real quick about I caught John Boy Media's breakdown of the no out call.
Man, it was a weird play.
What did they
say on it? I didn't see theirs.
Well, you've seen his breakdowns before. He does a pretty good job generally.
Yeah.
And to Royals fans' credit, he says he probably would have overturned it. Now, on the other end of that, of course, I was watching the video, so I saw the same thing that all the things he was pointing out. Man, it's easy to say why they said it was inconclusive, because that was difficult.
It really was. But it could have been called.
Yeah.
And that's what sticks for Royals fans. It's a rare play where it's like, yeah, I kind of get it both ways. Right. And that makes that hard, and that's not definitive. And I understand that, but
and it was huge. I mean, as far as when it happened,
you know, yeah, if they call him, of course it's go ahead, run. If they call him out, I think they would have left it that way too. Right. It's one of those, like, you have to be able to say without the shadow of a doubt that he was out or safe. And I just don't think you could do that. So the call stands. It would have been the same, I think, had he been called out. I don't think they would have reversed it either. And I know that sucks to hear for fans, especially if it goes against you. But it is what it is, right? Like, there's not a whole lot you can do about that in that situation. What you hope is that the bullpen is a little more effective, because what had been, you know, lights out lockdown bullpen gave up two runs in this game. And the Royals just aren't used to seeing that, right? Actually gave up three runs, sorry, in this game. And they're not used to seeing that. I thought something else interesting that came out of this was Michael Lorenzen. Lorenzen is, I thought they would use him as a starter in this series. They brought him in this game. And I guess that means we're going to get Singer unless somebody goes on short rest. So nobody's been announced after tonight on either side. None of the starters, because they don't have to be. We assume and that Lugo will go in that game three. But then they play quickly on Thursday. Nobody will have had enough rest. Sunday, Monday, Saturday, let's see, on Waka. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It'd be the fifth day for Waka. So if they want to just roll Waka out there, I suppose that they can. We'll see if they do that or if they go to Singer. That'll be a curious decision. But it'll be Lugo in game three, even though they haven't announced that yet. And that's what you want. Look, the Royals, we have liked the Royals' chances in the postseason because you feel like Waka and Lugo can go win you two games each in long series. That's why we like them. That's why we kept saying all season long, boy, if they can just get there, it lines up really well. And I still like, you know, Waka and some of the other starters to battle their way through if they need to. But the whole point of this is you like it when Reagans and Lugo can go twice, which they will both be able to do in this series. You only need three wins, right? Three wins. You got to get those two. That's it. That's your ticket right there. Those two guys.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Game two tonight. I don't know about you, Jed. It does not feel desperate at all to me. That feels like it sucks that they in a game where they got to Cole that they didn't get the win. But I don't feel today at all like the sky is falling, must win. I think they're fine. And if they go down 0-2, I don't think this series is over by any means. Certainly don't want that to happen. But the reality is you're supposed to win your games at home. If they can split New York, then it's a win.
Yesterday was always going to be the toughest, obviously. So yeah. And now tonight, it'd be a lot better if they got to win tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, well, sure it would. Yeah, you don't want to go down 0-2, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me and know how many times a team has been able to win a five-game series down 2-0 or down 0-2. But I suppose in that sense you can look at it that way, but I mean from a sense of like playing desperately or anything like it doesn't feel that way to me. It feels like, yeah, they probably should have won game one and they didn't get it done. Come right back into game two, pitch a little better, and you'll be good to go. That's what it feels like to me. And we'll see. I think that they will win the game tonight.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And they are plus money. So if you feel that way, they are plus money on the money line at plus 130. So if you feel like I do, there's your opportunity. Just take them on the money line. I love playoff baseball so much. It's been so good. And we'll get our game too. We'll get Royals tonight. You'll hear it right here on KFH. We're going to have a shorter segment here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, will hop on with us for his weekly visit. So we'll have that for you. Tommy will be in just a bit. We'll look ahead to Monday Night Football with the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll also react to the rest of what we saw on a Sunday in the NFL. And oh yeah, KU lost again. We probably need to get to that as well. It's a Sports Daily. It's jam-packed here on a Monday edition. As we go, I want to tell you about Pepin Suter Remodeling. Pepin is a supporter of the program now, and we're glad about that because he did a remodel for us this summer, and it was fantastic. I say this all the time. There are a lot of options out there as you make your way through. There are two things that stood out. First thing is his Pepin Suter Remodeling's bid was far, far lower than the other bids we took. So that was the first thing. Second thing, they took great. Actually, let me say there's three things. Second thing is they took great care of our family. They made us have a usable kitchen during a kitchen remodel. And if you've ever been through that, you know that that's a pretty big deal. We did not lose the access to our refrigerator or our counters or our cabinets or anything else. They made that really good, cleaned that mess up and made us and allowed us to be able to use that the entire time they worked. And then the third and most important thing, the work was really, 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 really well done. So give Pepin Suter Remodeling a call. You can go to their website, just search Pepin Suter, or you can give them a call, 316-573-6822. That's 316-573-6822. If you've got any sort of home renovation, give them a call, take their bid at least, and you'll see why we appreciate them and their support of this program. When we come back, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats, joins us. The bye week is over, and we plow ahead. For the Cats who have eyes on a Big 12 championship, we'll have that for you next.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH. It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Your new radio home for K-State Athletics, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. It's that time, Sports Daily, getting all the inside information on Kansas State. Let's go now to the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster is back in. Chad Chambers producing and joining us right now on our video stream and over the air here, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the K-State Wildcats after K-State comes off of a bye week. With that considered, Wyatt, I want to Royals going to win game two tonight? We'll take a little side shift here.
To be honest, I hope they do. I felt like they should have probably won game one. I didn't like the call at all. I don't understand the ruling. I've been a little bit of a critic of the replay because of that kind of stuff. That was a hard game to lose. So I'm hoping with the starters the next couple of games they can get the ship righted a little bit and get the series back in their favor, honestly.
They're going to win tonight. They're going to win tonight.
I think so, too.
All right, so let's look at some football. You know, I think the biggest thing for K-State in the bye week, at least from our perspective, is watching what Colorado did there at UCF the last time they're out and wondering if Colorado is this for real team. So now we've had a week to stew on it. We've seen Colorado, I think, be this is the version of Colorado we feared or we thought was at least they look like they're more toward, I guess, the upside than the downside. And now we've had a week to think about it.
I would agree with the more upside than downside, just based on the way they've played, at least to this point. I think what we're describing here is they probably took a step forward with that win at UCF in the way they did it. I think we all understand how good they are with those unbelievably talented guys like a Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter, right? But the fact that they ran the ball at UCF, but not only that, but they contained their run game with R.J. Harvey, I think that got everybody's attention. I think they're playing with more confidence. I think they're playing harder. They do have really good talent. And what concerns you, I think, is you're getting them in and off the bye week and in a confident way. And then that place will be jumping Saturday night. So there's certainly reasons for concern, no doubt about it.
You know, I when I think about Colorado, Wyatt, and I don't mean this as a knock on what Coach Prime has done and that entire program, but there's always a lot of noise. There's always a lot of external noise when it comes to the Colorado program. When, you know, the team is, when K-State is preparing for this game this weekend, and of course coming off of a bye week, what do you think the message is to try to tune all of that out and just know you've got to go in to a hostile environment, you've got to do your job?
Well, I think this is always a process. In all the years I've done this, I think teams, you know, either continue to get better and overcome obstacles, or frankly, they don't. That's why I was so excited to see them bounce back from the game in Provo the way they did against Oklahoma State. Now, I think in the last couple of weeks, K-State and West Virginia have probably proven that OSU isn't maybe necessarily what we thought they might be, but it's up and down too, right? I mean, Utah losing at home after beating OSU, that didn't make a lot of sense. Did we think Texas Tech was going to go and beat Arizona in Tucson the other night? I didn't necessarily think that. So I guess what I'm saying is I think all of that noise is exactly that. You can't let that bother you, to be honest. It's all about the preparation for the week, or in this case, a couple of 2 or 3 days extra than that, and then going in and taking care of business and executing at a high level. I think K-State is good enough to do that. But let's see. The last road game didn't work out very well, and you hope this one will.
So you get the extra time. I can't, and I know we've now gone three questions talking about Colorado and not K-State, yeah, but I want to do one more. And I feel like K-State has invited teams to throw on them and sold out to stop the run. Are you able to do that against a team like Colorado, who has such gifted pass catchers and, you know, and one of the best quarterbacks in the country?
Well, to me, that's as good a question as I've been asked since we started talking about K-State Colorado in the middle of last week, to be honest about it. I think it's, you know, when you look at the strength of their team, it is Shedeur Sanders. It is those receivers led by Travis Hunter. But all of those guys, whether it's Horn, Shepherd, whoever it might be, LaJonte Webster, they're all really talented guys. The question is going to be, can K-State get into their offense in terms of slowing the run game down and making them one-dimensional? And if they can do that, I'm going to take it. You know, yeah, you may be playing into their strengths a little bit, but if you can do that and also get some pressure on him, even if you don't get him to the ground a ton, make him move, get him going a little bit, then now I think you have a better chance. And then the obvious part is he's number two is not going to hurt you if he's standing on the sideline for, you know, a good 25, 26, yeah, 27 minutes of the game. Yeah. Let's hope they can do that. I don't know that they will or won't, but to me, that's going to be the deal. K-State has given up some pass yards, 244 yards a game, but they've given up very little on the ground. I think, in my mind, they're 4-1 in large part because of that.
defensively for Colorado, Wyatt, it's interesting because you don't look at the Buffaloes as really this elite level defense, but
right.
what they do really well is they limit what opposing offenses can do in the second half. They've made great adjustments at halftime this entire season. In fact, there's not a single team that they've played this year that scored more than 7 points in the second half against them. So really making those adjustments at halftime in the locker room, that's been major for Coach Prime, for his defensive coordinator, for that entire defense. So for the Wildcats offensively, as they come out, obviously getting out to a good start early is going to be important. But then how do you think that, you know, what changes or adjustments do you think offensively Kansas State will need to make going into the second half of the game?
That's almost an impossible question to answer because you don't really know how the first is going to go. If you go out there and you establish DJ Giddens and whatever in the run game, and then Avery can get the pass game going a little bit, I think you're in good shape. I don't know that it'll necessarily be that easy. But I think what we're describing is a coordinator and Coach Livingston who has done a really good job, and that's a big topic out there right now. They do have talent, and some of those guys are really starting to kind of make their way, right? I mean, you can see it in all three levels of their defense. Sure, that you've got the shining star in the back end with Hunter and probably, you know, Cameron Silman Craig's also a terrific talent back there. You gotta respect that. One thing too that really sticks out, guys, remember when we talked from the Provo weekend to the Oklahoma State weekend, you got to win in the red zone. I didn't really realize this until I started crunching numbers, you know, a few days ago. Colorado, with their defense in the red zone, is first in the league and seventh in the country in red zone defense.
Yikes.
You better be scoring touchdowns.
Yeah. Avery unlocking his legs hopefully helps there. I think Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, joining us. So obviously last time the late night window did not help K-State at all. This time though, they have a bye week going into it. Don't you think that makes it easier to adjust to?
Yeah, I do. But it's probably an advantage for both. When I look back and I've watched the CU-UCF game a couple of different times, even the announcers were talking about, we're seeing things that neither one of these two teams have done. It's going to be more so going into this after a bye, right? Excuse me, from my perspective anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's what coaches do. Give them a little bit of a wrinkle. So many times over the years, I've seen K-State, after a bye, drive right down the field and score, you know, maybe an 8, 10, 12, 14 play drive, and they are going to look a little different than they have maybe for the first handful of games. I think CU is also capable of that if they're able to run the ball, right? I think the key is really, can they run the ball? Because they become way more dangerous in my mind if they have even a little bit of offensive power in the run game. I mean, you know, it wasn't like they ran for 300 yards at UCF, but it was a monumental thing for them to get almost 130 there, right?
Yeah.
And especially when you can pitch it around like he does. I mean, you don't have to look very far. The guy's second in the conference, 27th nationally in pass efficiency. He's second and ninth in Big 12 national in total touchdown passes. He can throw the ball.
Yeah.
And that's been an issue with K-State. But I still say the game's won at the line of scrimmage and in the run game.
From a usage,
I'm wrong, and I'll admit it, but I think that's where the game goes.
From a usage perspective, Wyatt, offensively for the Wildcats, we've seen Dylan Edwards and DJ Giddens, kind of that distribution of touches. And then, of course, you add in the wrinkle of Avery Johnson with his legs. Do you think that Coach Kleiman, that, you know, offensive group, they're comfortable at this point in the season with the way that those touches are distributed? Because we've seen DJ Giddens and Dylan Edwards be extremely effective in doing different things. Are we at a point in the season where you think that, like, they're good with the way that things are playing out?
I think for the most part, Tommy, that's probably right. I think there are and have been times where the answer would probably be, man, we've got to get Dylan a few more, right? And what do we mean by a few more? It might be three or four or five. It might be two or three. He's such a unique talent. And like I think you said it perfectly. because he can do things that probably most people don't necessarily see. I mean, he ran pretty efficiently on the inside against Colorado, against Oklahoma State, rather, as an example. But DJ's also very efficient in about everything he does. I just think both of those guys are really good players, and they both need touches. And then with Avery, if you don't necessarily need him as much in the quarterback run game if those two guys are having a boatload of success. But that's probably easier said than done, and you're probably going to have to use him some in that. And why wouldn't you? Because of his skill set there. He is going to create major headaches for them if that is the case. At least that's the way I see it.
It's funny, Wyatt, as we look ahead on this schedule, not to look past Colorado mm-hmm. by any means, but just taking a look at the Big 12 as the week was off.
We
all thought some of the, you know, the relief in the schedule might come with Colorado and West Virginia and Arizona State. And now here we go. And those are teams in the top half of the Big 12. Colorado and Iowa State haven't lost a Big 12 game. K-State's a difficult schedule. We thought it was relief. I don't know if it's relief. I don't know that I believe in West Virginia. But it doesn't look like it's there. There is going to be much because, of course, you know, Kansas isn't relief at any point in a rivalry game like that. Week to week, man, I hope they can buy into the cliche because this is what it looks like it's going to be.
Well, the one thing that I feel good about is that I can promise you that's what Chris Klieman is telling those guys. You know, next week really doesn't matter if we mess this week up. Right. And I appreciate that because I think that's his approach always. I think they really try hard to block out the outside noise, as they call it, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And as you know, it varies from week to week. I think they just want to kind of keep grinding along and doing what they do and getting better at it. I think where the off week is probably going to help some is for some of those veteran guys who've been dinged up a little bit, probably feel a little bit better after a couple of two or three days where they don't have as much reps and actually had a couple of two full days off. That will make a difference. It'll help them too. There's no doubt about that. But I felt like that kind of came at a good time. And, you know, you're back to your thought, though, about the league. I mean, it's just been, you know, a little bit all over the map, hasn't it? And I think it kind of shows you what the league is. I mean, did we really think BYU was going to be 5-0? Did we really think Texas Tech was going to be 5-1 at this point?
Or Oklahoma State would be 0-3 to start Big 12 play?
100%. I mean, they were picked second and third in the league in most of the polls that we all looked at, right?
And for much of the year, they looked like they were that team, right? Until so I would ask you this then. As we wrap up here, do you think there is any more wiggle room? Do you think two losses will be able to get into a Big 12 championship game? I'm not sure. When you factor in tiebreakers, it almost feels like there's no more margin for error the rest of the regular season for K-State.
Yeah, I think you could argue that all day long either way. I mean that sincerely. I'm not trying to evade the question. I think it's part of me would immediately want to say, yep, you better not lose more than one, right? But I just wonder, you know, with the way the schedule plays out, I need to study a little bit on Iowa State's schedule as an example. I mean, they're off to a really good start, and I think people are starting to figure out they're pretty darn good, right? Yeah. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
How many times will they slip up? You know, Iowa State at West Virginia this week, how big is that game all of a sudden? Because West Virginia's 3-2, and that's what a lot of people look at. But in the league, they're 2-0. Those losses were at Pitt, who's pretty good, and Penn State at home. So maybe they're better than we think, too. But we've seen some ups and downs from all of the teams that we thought were going to be really good. Utah, Oklahoma State, K-State. Maybe not Iowa State, but those other three, I think that'd be a fair statement, wouldn't it?
Well, and the reason I ask it is because if K-State was to lose two, then you'd need BYU to lose three, right? Because they can't lose two. So that's one team. And if who is the second loss to, pick any team, then that team, because of who's left, would also likely have to lose three. That's where, to me, it gets real dicey. And it goes that way for the other teams in there too, right? I mean, I guess, you know, it doesn't really matter who wins between West Virginia and Iowa State because K-State get to play both of them. But it's going to, I don't know. At one point, I thought two would be okay, and I'm not sure I feel that way now because the bottom end of the league is better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really great point because those are some of the things that are happening. Like, I'm going to be repetitive here, but I really thought Arizona would beat Tech at home Saturday night, but they didn't, you know. Now, this is at the other end of the spectrum, and I get it, but did you think Houston would beat TCU?
No. Well, no. Not that I think either of those teams will be there in the end, because
they won't.
But Tech might be now, and you don't get to play Tech, right? Like, I don't think they can lose another game. I mean, they may get lucky. They may get lucky, but I think absolutely they have to have that attitude. Like, they do not get the opportunity to have another BYU, and that is a lot to put on the shoulders of Avery Johnson. You can't play that way again. You can't.
Right. The other variable there that I think has to be spoken about here is the Cam Rising thing. I mean, when's he going to play again?
Yeah.
Right? And if it's soon, are you thinking they will lose again? Right? I've said this all along, guys, and you know this. You've heard me say it. I really liked their schedule layout in the conference as well as most. And I said that, too, about Kansas. Now, we've seen the difference there. KU's lost some really hard games, right? And virtually all of them late. But Utah's done a pretty good job of slipping just one time. And maybe they will, maybe they won't if he comes back and stays healthy. But that appears to be a pretty big maybe right now.
It's going to be a blast. And that means they need to win in Colorado and another late night, stay up late with it Saturday night. What do you guys have fun on the broadcast this week?
Well, still kind of planning a little bit of that, but I think we've got an offensive lineman on our football team I'm going to try to talk to this week for pregame, Carver Willis, who's from Durango, Colorado. And I thought that'd be kind of a nice angle and visit with him. I'm telling you, fellas, he's played hurt most of the year. He's a tough guy. He's bided his time and has done a pretty good job being a starter over the last year and a half-ish. So probably talk to him and probably one other player, and then we'll get those coordinators. And I'm anxious to talk to Coach Klieman, not only to hear what he says today, but later in the week as we hone in on this one, because, like you say, 9:15 Central out there, this is a monster football game in mid-October. I mean, it's just what it is.
It's everything you want. We know you people betcha. Will be locked in because you've got the two quarterbacks nationally. Everyone's going to be paying attention to that. All right, Wyatt, safe travels this week. Good luck with it. We're looking forward to the call on Saturday night.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
There goes the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. I am so excited for that football game. I mean, if I'm being honest, it's the most excited I've been for any college football game this year, I think. Even, you know, I know Bama played Georgia and all that, but for it's mostly because of the two quarterbacks and the spotlight and all that stuff. I cannot wait for that game, and I'm so glad Colorado's good and we get this kind of hype going into it.
Well, I'm really interested to see how good they actually are, and I think that this game will be able to tell us a lot about Colorado. I mean, keep in mind, you know, the teams that they beat so far in the Big 12 are not incredible teams.
Yeah.
We're talking about Baylor. They needed overtime to beat Baylor. We're talking UCF. UCF isn't great. You know, they lost to Nebraska in a non-conference game earlier this year. So I think this is going to be a really strong litmus test to really see how for real Colorado is.
I think they're probably exactly what we thought they were, a really, really, really high ceiling and a pretty low floor. Austin has one question on it. Dylan Edwards, anytime touchdown Saturday. I'll have to see the juice, Austin. He doesn't get a lot of touches, so it's a little dicey. But if the juice is there, then I could be with you on that. A little revenge touchdown there for Dylan Edwards. I don't know how much Klieman is inclined to play up to the revenge, but, you know, it's always a little bit of fun. The other one I'm looking at with just real, you know, as we just begin to look at it, over-under on that game is 56.5, Tommy. I know the K-State defense has been much better. I'm hammering that over. Prime to late, I'm hammering that over. Both defenses could play well, and we could get some points up there just because of the game-breaking ability of so many different people. You could have good defensive performances, but like six big plays, like you're stopping, and then boom, all of a sudden Hunter's gone, or Edwards is gone, or Avery's gone, or should, like, it's I'm hammering that over.
Yeah, there are a ton of stars in this game on Saturday. Yep. That's what, you know, makes it fun. Everybody from Shadur and Travis Hunter to like the revenge factor with Dylan Edwards. DJ Giddens has kind of gone up to that big stage. Avery Johnson, yeah, of course. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun to see those really top tier talent face off.
Put it right into my veins. KU fans, we'll talk the Jayhawks a little bit later in the show. Tommy's back with us here. We got to get ready for Chiefs Monday Night Football. We've got some thoughts from Mitch Holthus on the game tonight. All those injuries. We'll get to that next, begin to preview that. And of course, we'll talk more Royals in just a little bit as well. It is Sports Daily. It is all Brockton Caster. We are glad to be here with you. By the way, Royals in the Major League Baseball playoffs. You can catch it for free right here on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune in tonight at 6. Coverage begins. Royals looking to even that series in New York. You can simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH at game time as well. We'll be right back. More Sports Daily coming your way.
KFH. The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you. It's Jake Walbrock, Tommy Caster, Jad Chambers is with us. Man in the hotline for you, the IHOP hotline at 869-1240. You can also leave us your voice messages via the Odyssey app. It's a great place. There's a little microphone on there. It's super easy. Austin did the research for me. Plus 140 on that Dylan Edwards anytime touchdown. I would endorse it as a fun, emotionally fulfilling bet, Austin. It's probably not one I would make myself, just because until we see Dylan Edwards get more touches, it's hard for me to take any time touchdowns when he's only touching the ball, you know, 8 or 9 times a game. So we'll see. But on an emotional perspective, heck yeah, that'd be a fun bet to take. All right, let's talk Chiefs. Let's start with this. Jad has some audio. Mitch Holthus, all the injuries will be on full display. We know Rashee Rice isn't playing in this game. It won't be for a while. We may find out today just how long that is, but it's not going to be for a while. So there's a lot of injuries. Chiefs have got to react. Here's what the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, had to say.
Because you're looking at now no Hollywood Brown, Isaiah Pacheco, Rashee Rice. So in essence, if you extrapolate it out, you're trying to replace 2,800 yards and 15 touchdowns. And sometimes you can just take on, you know, the hailstorm is so much, you've got to replace the roof. We're back at 2022 now of trying to invent every possible way, all hands on deck, to try to figure out how to replace those yards and touchdowns. That means everybody you can think of is going to have to be involved. Don't pick any of them on your fantasy team, but take all of them on your reality team. This is testing Andy Reid's ingenuity and his ability, his strongest attribute, and that is to handle flashpoints. He's done it every year. I talk about it publicly. I talked about it at the Wichita Rotary that day. Yeah. You guys were there. If people don't think about it, but he's amazing at troubleshooting and handling flashpoints, and he's got one now.
There's Mitch Holthus. One injury note that we probably have had a little bit more clarity on since Mitch provided that to the Stephen Ted Show over on KNSS is that Kareem Hunt appears to be fine. At least that's what he's saying. That's a big deal. And I love that. Don't take any of them on your fantasy team, but all of them are on your reality team. The one difference I would say is Travis Kelce is going to be a big part of the game plan now, I think. And I think they're going to have to force it to him. And Kareem Hunt could help a great deal. I don't know that Kareem Hunt's going to just get all the carries, and I'm not sure that I think that's the best idea either. I do think you can still mix in the other two, but I think Hunt will get the majority of it, and hopefully he can provide them a little bit of a spark back there. Whereas the other, you know, Carson Steele's kind of a safe play. I think I would describe it as, where Hunt looked to me like in the last game we saw him has a little more explosion. I actually like the Chiefs quite a bit tonight, Tommy. I think the Saints are a little fraudulent myself. I have thought that. You've been higher on them than I have, and I respect what Derek Carr does. I think he catches a bad rap. His his reputation to me reminds me of what Alex Smith used to go through. Like, Carr is not as bad as his haters say he is. So I'm happy that they've been good. Obviously, Alvin Kamara spent time at Hutch and all those things. But I think they're a little bit fraudulent. And I actually like the Chiefs quite a bit tonight.
You know, I've been higher on the Saints, as you mentioned, but I still pick the Chiefs to cover tonight. I think this is the game that, you know, they can, you know, sort of break through a little bit. And, you know, I know that there's not a ton of clarity yet on Rashee Rice and what, you know, the long-term implications of his injury are right now. But I do think, and you mentioned Kareem Hunt, I think Kareem Hunt is in line to have a really big game tonight. I do think that he's the lead back. I think that he's going to dominate the touches. You know, and especially with Carson Steele, you know, he's got, he's got that ability, but he's putting the ball on the turf. He's putting the ball on the turf. And, you know,
Andy Reid isn't going to give him the ball for a while.
It's not going to happen. And, you know, I do think that Travis Kelce, to your point, they're going to try to force it to him. But defenses know that too. I mean, defenses are going to know, hey, Rashee Rice is not there. They don't have Hollywood Brown. They don't have Isaiah Pacheco. Xavier Worthy is a rookie. And then there's kind of a hodgepodge of wide receivers after that. Like, defenses now can really key in on Travis Kelce, probably more so than what they had been able to do. So I think for that, in that matter, in that regard, I do think we're going to see a higher reliance on that running game led by Kareem Hunt.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I don't think it matters. They could have, I don't care who it is back there, they could bring Anthony Sherman back and it would be a reliance on the run game. Let's get more into it. Let's tell you what we think will happen tonight stylistically, how it will play out, all of those things when we return. It's Sports Daily. It's Albrock and Castor. We'll get a little HTO away in the second hour. So stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here at KFH. We'll come back. Hour number two of Sports Daily is next.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Kastor here. It is hour number two. The IHOP hotline is back open. It's, of course, brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays now with the new IHOP House Faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. You can also get in touch with the program by leaving us comments on our video streams. The YouTube stream has been hopping this morning with some comments. You can also do that on Facebook and on X. You can also, of course, catch us on the 12 News Connected app on your smart devices. Your phone, your smart TVs, your computers, whatever it is. We appreciate you tuning in to watch us, and your voice messages are welcome as well through the Odyssey app. You just click the little microphone, you go there. We start hour number two and tell you this portion of the program is brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Good way to start the game off tonight. Head up to the bar, have a beer, maybe get some wings, watch the game. Go check out Crestview's facilities if you haven't. It's the 36 holes of golf that everybody knows about. But it's far more than that. Tommy and I, both members, we really enjoy our time over there. Tell them Sports Daily sent you. Rick points out that Mecole Hardman has a knee issue too, Tommy. I don't think of Mecole Hardman as a factor in this offense, no matter who's hurt and not hurt. I think he's a gadget player, and I think he's there for special teams. But it's something to pay attention to. And you sent me something. So Justin Ross and Nico Remigio were getting the reps. I think it's Justin Watson. I think it's Noah Gray, and I think it's Travis Kelce. Are the big pass catch. If either one of those other guys are a factor, that's great. I don't think they will be much of one. I think it's going to be a lot of tight ends, a lot of running back usage, that kind of a thing. Much like we saw, honestly, when Rice went down, and I would suspect that Watson is the guy that takes some of those targets away more than the others from Rashee Rice.
Yeah, I think that Juju does as well. I also think he's
been strange, hadn't he? Juju, yeah. Like he does, he must not have much. And I love that he's there and he's been a great blocker.
Yeah.
But if he was limited, you know, 2 years ago, he's really limited. He's really limited now.
You know, and I do think that, you know, you can't forget that Xavier Worthy poses that, you know, deep ball threat basically at any moment. And so if Mahomes can get into a volume situation, and I think that the guys that you listed off really fit into that volume type play, whether it's Kelce or Gray, Watson, you know, maybe Juju to an extent, then that does open things up a little bit for Mahomes to be able to take some shots. And if he's able to do that, of course, that's probably going to be an Xavier Worthy type play.
Yeah, I mean, Worthy's the X factor, right? Worthy is the guy that I think nationally people are like, oh, first round pick, he's going to slot right in and get a ton of targets. Okay, I don't think he's ready for that, but we didn't know Rashee Rice was ready for it until he was ready for it, right? Is Worthy all of a sudden ready for it? Maybe. I would say it's more likely after the bye week than this game. But yeah, and if he's getting one or two shots a game, maybe he gets five, right? Like maybe they just go ultra aggressive with him. Would love to see it, but they have to allow themselves to play that way. I don't know, Tommy. I love Worthy and what he brings to the offense. I think it was a good pick. Don't misunderstand what I'm going to say here, but I just don't see him as that guy. I don't.
As far as being a volume type
guy? As a target monster.
Yeah, yes. I'm not sure that that's really his role.
I don't know that it ever will be, I guess is my point. Like we wouldn't have thought that about Tyreek Hill either. Now they have different body types. They're both really fast. Tyreek Hill's big, short, but big. Worthy's not that, you know, when you look at size. So I would never see him as more than a 7-8 target a game guy. And that would be like at the high end. If he gets that, I think that's that's pretty good. But I think when we think about the Chiefs offense post Rashee Rice, we can't put that kind of, and I know people will like, oh, Worthy's a totally different player than Rice, totally different. And I just don't know that that's in their best interest. I think their best interest is to have somebody like Watson. If you're going to just pepper somebody with targets, let it be him and let Worthy still be your shot play, because the way their defense is, right, that's what you want. You want a defense to keep a game close and then Worthy to just take the top off a few times.
I think that that's right. And I, you know, again, the big issue becomes who can consistently get the volume of catches. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just one guy. It can be several different players, but they've got to be effective in doing it. They've got to be consistent in doing it. And so that goes back to, I think that you mentioned that, you know, this guy and he would be somebody that I would consider probably the main beneficiary of all of this. And that's Justin Watson. And that's because of the trust that he's built up with Patrick Mahomes, where while he's never going to wow you athletically, he's never going to do anything that you're going to be like, man, that guy's a fantastic receiver. He's fairly consistent, you know, and that's, you kind of know what you're going to get with him. And inside an offense where by and large, you don't know what you're going to get with that offense from game to game because of the injuries and because of just a lot of different factors and components that play into it. The reliability, I think, is probably paramount. Because if you can lean on that, then like to your point, that hopefully will take the top off the defense a little bit more. So I'm really looking at a recipe or a formula of Kareem Hunt being able to soften up the defense, Justin Watson specifically being able to connect with Mahomes on, you know, probably I'm probably looking at 5 to 7 targets where he can, you know, reliably catch the ball and maybe even move the chains. And then at that point, you're taking the top off and you can hit Kelce over the top, or you can hit Worthy down the sideline. Like there are some opportunities there, but other things have to set itself up first before you can then take those bigger shots.
Watson, I think the biggest difference between Watson and Rice is Watson after the catch, right? But I think Watson can run the right route and catch the ball, which is a bit, and I think Patrick Mahomes has his trust, right? And that's what, he's just not going to rip him off like Rice does sometimes. But that will be the biggest difference, right? Can they play the style of offense they want without Rashee Rice? They haven't had to do that in a really long time. And so we don't really know. All we know is post-injury in the Chargers game, they've had Rice be in this role now since whatever it was, without looking like week 4 or 5 of last year, like they've had that. And Mahomes has had that. And I know it's a little frightening to think of Mahomes without Rice, because Mahomes hasn't been, you know, like stat monster Mahomes, even with Rice. What's it going to be without him? I'm not sure. We look at the two quarterbacks tonight. Derek Carr's been better than Patrick Mahomes this year. You know, roll your eyes, whatever. You know, statistically speaking, he has been. And so Mahomes has got to play better too, but he's got to do it now without his top target. And that'll be really interesting to see. I think he will. I just don't know how he will.
He's got to have a cleaner game. I mean, that's going to be the biggest thing. I mean,
there's less room for error.
There's less margin. But then on top of that, I also wonder if the way that everything has kind of played out with Rashee Rice and, you know, some of these injuries that have popped up, I think it kind of forces Mahomes to, I don't even want to use the word conservative, because I don't think that's fair. That word gets a bad rap, but I think it forces him to be more careful.
The whole league is conservative right now.
I get it, but like that has a negative connotation to it.
Right.
You know, I just mean that if you don't have your full arsenal of exciting weapons, that may kind of make you take a step back a little bit and say, okay, like I can't always lean on my receivers to go out and get it. I can just put it up there and they're going to go up and get it. I've got to be a little bit more nuanced. I've got to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more cautious, and make sure that the reads and the progressions that I'm going through, everything is there, because that margin of error, like you mentioned, is a lot smaller now than it was even a week ago. And let's be honest. I mean, I think it's okay to call a spade a spade. Mahomes didn't have a great month of September. He didn't. From a statistical point of view, he was kind of middle of the road. He turned the ball over too much. It was uncharacteristic of Patrick Mahomes in the month of September. Now, the team won all their games, so by and large, I think you can live with that. But again, you've got to make sure that, especially now without your wide receiver one, and who knows how long he's going to be out, you've got to be a lot cleaner. You've got to take care of the football that much more, because you don't have that weapon out there to be able to do things for you.
Well, and when we talk about Mahomes, I have every intention of getting to the Saints, but when we talk about Mahomes, it's a relative thing to say he didn't have a good September, because he didn't, by his own standard. They won every game they played in September.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I don't mean that just like as a crutch. I mean it as he is making more mistakes and missing more throws than we're accustomed to. But the magical stuff late in games, the intangible stuff that we talk about with Mahomes, that's all still there. Or they wouldn't be 4-0. They wouldn't be. I mean, the ability to lead the team late, the ability to make those things happen, that's also a part of what makes Mahomes Mahomes. And so he's been doing that, but statistically, yeah, it hasn't been there. So how much better statistically does he need to be? I don't know. They're 4-0
well, but
against
teams. I don't know if you can draw that comparison or that conclusion that the reason that they're 4-0 is because of just the intangibles that Mahomes brings. Like, that's part of it. That's part of the equation. Their defense has been really good. And you know, especially stopping the run.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so like there have been a couple of times that they've been, you know, on the brink. It wasn't Mahomes that kept them from, you know, that led them to beat the Ravens in the first game. It was, you know, a play at the very end to Isaiah Likely in the back of the end zone where he stepped out of bounds. Mahomes wasn't even on the field for that. You know,
but
he had
the touchdown before that,
did.
Right? Didn't he lead them on the touchdown?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But it's all combined into one.
Let me put it this way. Did you watch the game last night? It was late, so I mean, forgive you
some
if you
of
did
it,
not.
Yeah, a little bit of it.
Mahomes isn't doing what Dak was doing, right? Like what trying to give these games away, what Fields
Dak
did.
Dak got him a victory. I mean, he got him a victory at the very end.
It was a great final drive. If you had watched that game like all the way through, you'd know exactly what I'm talking about. He had 3 red zone turnovers, essentially. Like, just like, oh my, like literally understand the flow of the game and know that you can do anything else. Kick the field goals, you'll win the game. Like, that's the kind of stuff where Mahomes is just like mechanical brain is still ticking perfectly. And so it's unlikely that he'll do a lot of things, especially late in the game, to cost his team the game. And this year in the NFL, that's a big deal. Josh Allen, they lost the game because they decided to throw the ball three times. And I haven't gone to look and seen who's, you know, who's responsible for that. If that was a coaching decision or Allen making those calls, I don't know. But like, we see this all the time across the, Joe Burrow had a late interception yesterday after a magnificent game. He had a crucial pick late. And I'm not, you know, that one's probably a little bit less so because they did need to score at that moment. But if Mahomes can just do what he's done, obviously we want him to limit the turnovers. Certainly we do. They'll be okay. Because on the other side, he's got a defense that's been ahead of schedule. I'll call it that. And you've got the Saints here with Carr in prime time. I like the Chiefs tonight because I like the defense's chances to do something. They should be able to take away Chris Olave, don't you think? I mean, if you're looking at this from a Chiefs perspective with McDuffie and the way Watson's played, I think they can at least limit Olave and make somebody else beat them. They've got other good players. Rashid Shaheed's good. Alvin Kamara's obviously good. But so is the Chiefs defense. I like them in this matchup because I do think everything funnels through those three guys. And they have been able to, at least thus far, focus in on other team star players and do a pretty good job this year. That's why I like the Chiefs tonight.
Yeah,
I think it's a good matchup.
For me, it's less about them limiting Chris Olave in the passing game, and it's more about them continuing to do what they've done against the lead backs on the opposition. Like, they have really done a great job. And, like, you know, watching Derrick Henry yesterday, I mean, he obviously has been incredible this entire season. And outside of that opening game, the Chiefs really limited him. They've done the same thing. They did it with Bijan Robinson. They did it with Zach Moss. They've got the chance to do it against Alvin Kamara tonight. And that's an unexpected part of that defense that I think has come along so well this season. And it's not to take anything away from guys like Trent McDuffie or, you know, other players in the secondary. But the expectation, I think, is higher in the passing defense, then I don't know if anybody came into this season thinking, man, the Chiefs are going to be a really good run-stopping team. I don't think anybody thought that. That wasn't the narrative at all. So that's been an unexpected surprise and something that at least through four games they've been able to really lean on. And I think that knowing that we have a four-game sample size of that, I would look at them to continue that tonight against Kamara. That's why I think that ultimately the Chiefs will win.
I agree. I think they've done a really good job, though, limiting other players' best players. And the Saints have funneled everything through a small number of players this year. And I think Spags, that's good for Spags. If you know that, if you can stop, you know, probably two of those three or maybe even one of those three, that your chances are pretty good. That I love the Chiefs defense in those types of situations. They have historically, not as much this year, not been elite, at least, we'll call it to be nice, against pass catching backs either. And they're going to get, you know, the best one of the last, I don't know, decade, at least, in Alvin Kamara tonight. And I know he's older, but you got to remember who Alvin Kamara is. He's absolute elite pass catcher. And so the Saints, if I'm the Saints, that's what I'm doing. I'm throwing it to Kamara a lot tonight. And the Chiefs have to score. The one thing that I don't, you know, like, have off the top of my head is how good, or even as I look at it and try to, I don't know how good the Saints defense is. I don't think it's that good. I think it's okay. So what do we do with the game? We both like the cover. The over-under at 43 times, I don't have a strong feel on the over-under. I like Kelsey props. I will say that. And I probably like Hunt props.
I love
Hunt props.
But
I don't like the over-under.
I mean, think about it this way. And I know that sometimes you can get caught up in the emotion of things. But this is a homecoming for Kareem Hunt. You know, he played last week, but this is his first game back inside Arrowhead.
Yeah, that's
in 6 years that I don't think anybody really ever thought. I don't even think he thought that he would be back in that position.
No.
And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that everything is lining up perfectly for that homecoming because he got back into game action last week. You had the Carson Steele fumbles. You saw Hunt kind of be the hot hand. He was effective to where they kept feeding him the ball against the Chargers. Now you're back at home in front of a fan base that they haven't seen you in the last half decade plus. I think the stars are aligning for a really big Kareem Hunt game.
Well, and if I told you, you know, outside of the obviously Patrick Mahomes is what he is. But if I asked you the question right now, what is the strength of the Chiefs offense? What would you tell me?
The running game.
I would tell you the middle of the offensive line, the interior, the center and the two guards. That's what I would say is the strength of the Chiefs offense. And they must, even if they must be able to commit to that. And I think their defense allows them to do it, right? Just commit to it. And I honestly don't really care what's happening. Even if the Saints are selling out and it's not super effective for two or three drives, unless the defense falls apart, I think you go to it and you stick with it, because it is right now with all the injuries and everything this team is dealing with, I would say the two biggest points of strength are the secondary and the interior offensive line. So let's utilize both of those things if you're and I think they will. I would bet you Kareem Hunt gets 20 is ambitious, but I think it'll be at least 20 touches tonight.
I don't disagree with that. And if he does that and he's effective, that's going to soften up.
I can get it even if he's not effective.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, clearly going to soften up the Saints defense. But on top of that, I mean, going back to the over-under, if you're leaning on the running game, I don't know. I think the under is probably favored. I'm going to stay away from it entirely.
I'm staying away from the over-under.
But if I had to choose one side or the other, I'd probably lean under just because I think I know, you know, what direction they're going to want to go. And it's not like the Chiefs have been this, you know, prolific offense. Now, the Saints had been the first couple of weeks of the season, but I'm not sure that that's going to carry on.
Yeah, yes. It should be a fun game. It should be a fun game. Last question on this, and then we'll talk Royals next. How many shots would you take to Worthy? Just straight over-the-top shots to Worthy. I'd take at least three if I'm Andy Reid.
Depends on the situation. It's all situational. I mean, that's not really me committing to anything. I mean, I'm not going to put a number on it. If they're the right opportunities, then they can throw it to him over the top 10 times for all I care.
I'm asking for a prediction here. Like, how many just straight shots will they take? Because I think it'll be at least three. The reason I ask it is, what's the only way defensively that you make sure they don't do that? You keep somebody over the top over there, right? That's why I like Kelsey in this game.
Somebody like Tyrann Mathieu?
It doesn't matter. You got to keep two people. The only way you keep Patrick Mahomes from not taking that shot lots of times is to make sure there's a safety over there. That's it. Because if he's got single coverage, I don't care who it is, he's going to say, go as fast as you can, and I'm going to, just like he did the other day. Do you see how I described that play? I told him I'm going to throw it as far as I can. Run as fast as you can. Let's see what happens. They'll do that lots in this offense without Rashee Rice, as long as teams don't put a safety over there. And if they put a safety over there, that's why I kind of like Kelsey to pick things up lately. That's where I love Kelsey props tonight, because if a safety's over there, a safety's not in there, and they're going to have to leave linebackers in to help stop the run, I think this is an opportunity for Kelsey tonight. That's why I bring that up with Worthy. Whereas Rice, you don't feel like you need to do that. They kind of need to do it now. And so I think they will. Monday Night Football, you can hear it over on KNSS, your home of Chiefs football, the Chiefs Radio Network, 98.7. We're looking forward to it tonight. We're also looking forward to Royals baseball. Coverage of these two games begins at the same time. How fun is that? Let's get Tommy's thoughts on game one, and we'll dig into game two. Royals, ALDS. Your calls welcome, 869-1240. We're coming right back. More Sports Daily after this.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Let's give away a little HTO here. It's pretty easy for you to win. We've got an opportunity to win a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from, including the all-new peach cobbler. It's back. You can enter by texting the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. That is the number there. You can also win some free coffee from us featuring Free Rain Coffee, iced, hot, however you like it, by also texting that keyword TEA to 20357. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Tommy, the Royals, down 0-1. You missed the beginning. I would ask the question. I do not feel desperation today. I do not. Ken, great Royals fans, chimes in. Witt, Perez, Pasquatch combined 1-for-14. The Royals were still in the game. That's a part of it for me. They were not expected to beat Cole anyway, especially with Walker on the mound. Missed opportunity, yes. Desperation time, I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think they'll win tonight. I think that if anything, they should take confidence from that. Use whatever you want. You can use the call on at second base. You can use the called strike three to, you know, to Bobby Witt. You can use whatever you want. But if you're the Royals going into game two, you do not feel outmatched in this series at all.
No, I don't think outmatched is the mindset or the mentality of this team whatsoever. And, you know, I would agree with you that desperation is probably too strong of a word. Because I don't think they feel desperate, and I don't think that they should feel desperate, but I do think that they should feel the urgency. I think that they should feel, you know, the absolute importantness of them, you know, getting game two. You can't fall two games to none, you know, with then you have to have your, you know, best A game for three games in a row. I just don't see that being, you know, something the Royals can overcome. So while they're not desperate tonight, I do think that you've got to understand what's at stake if you don't win that game tonight. And that's got to fuel them for sure. But yeah, I don't think that they're outmatched. I never got the sense in the game on Saturday that they felt like they were outmatched whatsoever. It was, you know, punch counter punch between both of these teams going back and forth. It was so much fun to watch.
It's a great baseball game.
And knowing that, as Ken mentioned, Witt, Perez, and Pasquantino didn't really deliver. They were getting their offense from other places in that lineup. And so knowing that, yeah, I don't think that you walk away from game one feeling overmatched at all. I think you go away from it thinking we can hang with this team. In fact, we can probably hang with any team in Major League Baseball as long as we've got, you know, the right stuff going. And they've got to get that right stuff tonight. I think it's going to help a lot, obviously, that they've got Reagans on the hill.
Five-game series are strange. If it was a seven-game series, it's an even easier answer. No desperation at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you always feel desperation in the postseason, but it does not feel like to me the Royals' backs are against the wall. And I think them playing free and easy, play the exact same game offensively you played, you know, Monday and you win this game, or Saturday and you win this game Monday. That's sort of how I feel about it. So there are times in a playoff series where you get through the first game and you're like, oh, crap. Like, we're going to have to play perfect baseball if we're going to beat this team. I don't think that's the case. I think Reagans against this lineup can be advantageous. They strike out. He strikes people out, right? Rodon has had two good starts against the Royals this year. I don't really know what to make of that because so much of this offense is different than what he saw. Right, in either game, between Pham and Gurriel being in there now, the second time, I don't believe they were there when he faced them in June. They wouldn't have been there when he faced them in June. And then you go back to his early season start, it's like a totally different offense out there. So I don't know what to make of Rodon's role in this, but I do know that the Royals, you know, you came into the series saying Gerrit Cole can't beat us three times in this series. And that's what you felt good about if you were the Royals. You need to certainly win your Reagans and Lugo starts. I mean, that's but we knew that. That's what we already knew that. Like, we knew that was their ticket. And so now they have this chance to do it. I think there is, I don't want to say no chance. It's unlikely, Tommy, that the middle of the lineup is as unproductive as they were in that game. And largely have been. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. had some clutch hits in the Orioles series. But none of those three dudes are hitting for power right now. Every day that goes by makes me think that piece will wake up. Like, they're going to wake up. and start to provide a little pop in the middle of the lineup.
We also don't know, you know, what percentage Vinny Pasquantino actually is in swinging the bat. Like, I know that, you know, he's been able to, you know, hit some home runs in batting practice and things like that. We don't know what the status of that thumb is, and really, is that affecting his swing? Is it affecting his contact, the power, all of that? And we just don't know that, but I do think that even the threat of him being in the lineup, the threat of potentially, you know, being productive, that benefit outweighs any kind of risk on, you know, maybe he's not going to be super effective.
Yeah, I think he's okay. I think he's fine. He doesn't have a ton of power anyway, right? I don't even know if he's going to be a 30, 35 home run guy. But he's got extra base power. Can he get you a double? He's so patient at the plate. He's so clutch in, you know, with runners in scoring position. That's what they need out of him. They need power out of Salvador Perez more than anybody else, I would say. He, to me, of watching those three, is the one that looks the most off his game. Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't look off his game. Bobby Witt Jr. looks fine, and I think will be fine. Salvador Perez is the one who's not patient enough for my taste right now at the plate. I'll put it that way. You think about all the things in game one, him getting gunned down at the plate, his play to throw out the runner at second. Where did you land with that call, by the way? I thought it was not definitive enough. I think had they called him out, they wouldn't have been able to overturn it, just like they called him safe and they wouldn't have been able to overturn it. It was that close. That was as close as you can be. That was wild.
Daylight. I'm just going to use the word daylight. I mean, you could see light, you know, between the glove and the base.
The
you know,
problem, I could see that. The problem that I couldn't see, and the problem that I couldn't see is because from that angle, you could see daylight. You didn't have the angle to see the, you know, the split second the leather touched the leather from glove to shoe. And that's, so you couldn't, unless they have some way to like sync up by time code somehow, both of those angles. The problem for me was that angle, you could see the sliver. You could not see the moment the glove touched the foot definitively. And so that's why, again, had they called him out, I don't think they would have overturned that either. It's just the fact, and everybody on the planet in real time thought he was safe. It looked like the throw was way late, but it's tough. That is tough. That is a tough call.
Tough break. I mean, you know, a game altering call that ultimately went the Yankees way, right? And like, what's unfortunate, and I thought about this a lot yesterday, what's unfortunate is that particular play and the review and the controversy around it took away from what was an incredible baseball game, incredible playoff baseball with a back and forth chess match between two teams that, you know, one would take the lead and the other one would take the lead and then back and forth and back and forth. That's not what people were talking about yesterday. They were talking about the Jazz Chisholm call.
That's not what Royals fans were talking about. We'll put it that way. I was probably more bothered by the strike three call on Bobby Witt Jr. in the ninth, than I was the out call, quite frankly, because I thought that one was it. Like, can we get to the point in baseball? And I'm not for robot umpires, but we all have the square. Like, that technology's not too good to not be able to do a quick review. You get two a game, whatever it is. Just get two strike call challenges a game if that's the way you want to do it, because it's real easy. If no part of the circle is touching the square, it's a ball. If any part of the circle is touching the square, it's a strike. How would an umpire never get that wrong? So just give in those big moments, right? Give the opportunity to take a look at it, because that's in the bottom of the ninth of the top of the ninth of a playoff game. And it was a ball.
Yeah, I think that
against the most exciting player in the American League, by the way.
Don't you think that square, though, because I think about this a lot, that square provides you kind of a false sense of like a definitive strike zone? Like, because
I think it gives us a true sense.
Maybe it does, but the umpires behind the plate don't see that square.
I know. So that's like, what I mean.
What I'm saying is that like,
give them a challenge.
If you didn't have that square on your TV screen, the umpires are still going to make the same call. They're still going to do what they're doing. I'm just saying, like, there wouldn't be the, you know, the guys on their couch like you and me that are like, oh, that's a ball, that's a bad call, whatever. You know, you don't have the box, you don't have that context, that frame to be able to say that's right or wrong. You just go with what the umpire's calling. Now, there are going to be egregious calls that everybody knows are not correct, but the borderline ones, you kind of, I don't know, I think you kind of shut down the argument a little bit when you don't have that frame on your screen for every pitch.
But baseball has it. Like, we have the technology, let's use it. Because we also don't have the keen eye of Bobby Witt Jr., who knew that wasn't a strike, and it wasn't a strike, right? So if we have the technology sitting there, which we clearly do, then just use it in the biggest moments of a game. Like, you just allow yourself to use the technology, just like you do with the other replays. There's no reason you can't replay that. You have the square. The umpires don't. I'm not blaming the umpire. That was a close call in the strike zone. I think baseball would be better if you didn't have the variable of a non-consistent strike zone. Could you imagine if we didn't use first down markers in football and we just went by of wherever the ref thinks the first down line is? Like, we don't allow that. Could you imagine in the NBA not going back to see if a toe was on the line of a three-pointer? Like, we have this technology. We use it all the time. But we pretend like balls and strikes are this unspoken. You can't argue balls and strikes. You can't do anything. It's sitting there.
I just don't
use it.
Even if they do, I just don't have any faith that it's going to be used correctly, that it's going to ultimately end up helping situations at all. Because, I mean, like, going back to the review on the stolen base with Jazz Chisholm, I don't know. I think it was pretty definitive that Chisholm was out. And they reviewed it and they still stuck with safe. I think that happens. That's going to happen more often than not if you just load the game up more with review after review after review.
It's not that. This one seems easy to me because if the circle touches the square, it's a strike. If it does not, it's a ball. There is no room for, like, the human element of that. Now I will say this, the broadcast teams use the squares. So does baseball agree with the squares all the time? That would be the wrinkle to work out. Is it the same technology across the board? Can that be somehow utilized? Because what you can't do with balls and if that's not the case, then you can't do this. Because if you're just going to try to review, like, was the ball above or below his knee, or where was the plane? You know, is the ball? You have to if the technology's not there, then forget everything I'm saying right now. If it's just broadcast technology and not actual baseball ability to use, then everything I'm saying is irrelevant. But if it is, like, if that's the same square and it's just fed to the broadcast teams, then use the square. If in a moment like that, be able to use it. I don't know whether that is or that isn't technology wise. It just sucks when, and it's more, almost just said a bad word. It's more sucky in the more egregious calls, right? I agree with that, where it's like a foot outside and they ring somebody up. That also needs to be taken away somehow. Even if that's just somebody in New York watching and be like, yo, dude, that was a terrible call. That's not a strike. I don't know. It's fine. Everything's fine. The point of this for me is everything's fine. The Royals are not in they're going to be just fine. I think they win tonight. And then we start the series over in a 3-game series. And we'll evaluate that as we make our way through. But I think they're okay. I that was such an incredible baseball game Saturday night. Man, that was good.
It was fun. It was fun. We'll continue tonight for sure. I really want to think that at least a portion of the middle of that lineup will be able to bounce back tonight. And more than likely it's going to be probably Witt out of the three. But man, I want to see Salvi. Yeah. Have a really strong
It'll be the
game.
Biggest difference. It'll be 100%. The biggest difference in their postseason is if he gets going. He is the streakiest, most, like, cannot get him out when he's going right player, I think, in the offense. The stark difference, I should say, between where he is now, which is waving at everything low and away on 0-2, to where he is when he's locked in. Bobby Witt Jr. is more consistent. That's why I wouldn't, you know, he's a tougher out, but he's more consistent. He's always a tougher out. Right now, Salvador Perez is gettable, and he's got to probably just get a few walks more than anything to bounce that back. But you'll hear that game tonight on KFH. It's a 6:38 first pitch. Coverage begins at 6:00 here on KFH. Let's look at the rest of, well, no, you know what? Let's do when we come back. Let's talk KU. We'll react to the rest of the NFL tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have to. I know. I feel the same. We'll come back with it. It's all Brockton Castor at Sports Daily.
KFH.
Here we go. Let's talk some KU football. Jake Ballbrock, Tommy Castor with you on Sports Daily. Another loss to Arizona State. Another late game loss for KU. If you count the late game losses, they could just as easily be, what would it be, 4-2 as 1-5? This one was, interesting to the fact that I don't think we can lay the blame on the offensive coordinator or the quarterback for this one, Tommy. Like, they both made progress, I thought, in this game. Daniels looked far more like himself than we've seen all season long. Still not quite as accurate as he has been historically, but much, 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 much better. The play calling, I don't remember a point, and I was watching the Royals, so I jumped in the second half. But listen, I didn't think there was any point where I was like, oh, Grimes is just blowing. It was the defense, and I don't even know what to say now. You give up 35 points to Arizona State. If they can't play good defense, they're toast.
Well, Kansas defensively, they're making opposing quarterbacks out there look like Michael Vick every time they play. I mean, you've got these quarterbacks that are running wild over the Jayhawk defense, and the guy from UNLV did it. The guy from TCU did it. And then, of course, on Saturday, the guy from Arizona State did it too. That's a major issue. And just defensively as a whole, they're not getting it done. And it's insane how it's changed from a few weeks ago to now, where the defense was the only thing keeping them in ball games. And now all of a sudden it's done a complete flip-flop, a complete 180. Now the defense is the issue, but the offense is getting it figured out. One thing that has been consistent, I think, though, is that the game management continues to be an issue for the Jayhawks. They're not doing a great job at that. The way they closed out the first half was awful, and that's really where they lost the game. They let Arizona State convert a fake punt. Ultimately, that tied the game at halftime, and then from there, we all know what happened. So it's mind-numbingly infuriating that in all of the five losses in a row, the Jayhawks have had an expected, the percentage of expected win percentage has been like in the 70 to 80 to 90% in the fourth quarter in every single game in the five game losing streak. And they can't figure it out. They cannot close these games out. They've got to make some changes. I'm at a point now where I don't even really care what it is. They've got to do something. I was a little bit more at the beginning, like really kind of spearheaded into, I feel like they need to do this one particular thing. Now I really don't care what they do. Like, just make some changes. You can't keep doing this. If you want to get rid of both coordinators, that's fine with me. It doesn't really matter. Just do something.
That's been my thing the whole way through, the refusal to do anything. And, there was a point where to me, it needed to be Jalen Daniels. There's been other, that's the part to me that is just blown my mind since the UNLV loss, is like, why aren't they doing something? Why aren't they doing something to put the fear of God into the players? Like, is anybody safe right now? I would say no. And because what's the alternative, right? It's not working. Do something else. Is it been unfortunate? Sure it has. It has been. But the problem for me as somebody who watches it, and some of this has to bleed on to the side. I remember it was a UNLV game when KU got the ball the last time they got the ball, thinking there was absolutely no chance they were going down and scoring, right? It felt the same way at the end of this Arizona State game. Whenever they had the long touchdown catch and it was being reviewed, it's not even a joke. I was like, I kind of hope they call this incomplete.
Yeah.
Because if Arizona State gets the ball back, they're scoring.
You and I were texting back and forth. I'm like, they left him too much time. They left Arizona State too much time.
Call it incomplete.
Just from watching the way that entire game defensively played out, there was no way that the Jayhawks defensively were stopping Arizona State.
Yeah. And so my point is, like, if we're seeing this and thinking this and everybody, like, the sidelines feel got that same lingering shadow over them, like, they've got to be feeling the same thing. And so the reality is they're not as good as we thought they would be. They're just not. But I don't, what I still don't know is how far off of that are they? And we're never going to find out if they don't do something to snap out of this. You know, their Big 12 chances, all that, those are obviously gone. Can they still make a bowl game? Maybe. Are they still, you know, because we saw Jalen Daniels play better.
They're going to have to win out. If they want a bowl game, they're going to have to, you know, that margin of error is not there.
So, you know, can they be competitive? If you're a KU fan, can they put up a fight against K-State? Like, all of those things. I made the joke, I think, to you, like, maybe they should just, you know, tank for the number one overall draft pick. Like, you don't get that in college football, right? Like, you still got to salvage a season. You're building a new stadium. All of these seniors are gone. Now, maybe that's a good thing, the way they've been playing, but they're all gone. And we know the recruiting hasn't been the same as it was when these players were all recruited. So it's been good. It's been good. But, man, I hate this so much. Absolute nightmare scenario. Nightmare. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight. It's an exciting night of sports here with us at Odyssey. We'll tell you all about it next.